Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Well, welcome everybody, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for May 30th, 2012. Now, given the birth of my daughter, Catherine, this week, today's podcast is going to be an encore presentation of my earlier interview back in February with Dr. Barry Sears as we talked about the role of fish oils in your health. Now, I'll be back next week with a brand new podcast, so thank you so much, as always, for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. And I hope you enjoy my interview with Dr. Barry Sears as we discuss the role of fish oils in your health. We are going to take the entire podcast today and speak to one of the leading experts in the country on fish oils, Dr. Barry Sears, and I really think you're going to enjoy it. We're going to talk about fish oils themselves, what their role is in inflammation. We'll talk a little bit about krill oil and all the hoopla behind that. Is it really worth it? And just talk with Dr. Sears in general, as he's the originator of the Zone Diet, about the role of nutrition in our life and inflammation. All of it is so important when we're talking about our emotional and our physical well-being. It really is mind-body. You cannot separate it. So I'm really glad you are here. As always, please visit us at the website, thehealthymind.com. I try to update that several times during the week with the latest in health news. You can find me on Twitter, and that's at Dr. Zafiridis. And you can always email me at peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And I really have to say thank you to those who have been emailing with support. I'm listening to your suggestions and taking them to heart. In fact, we are going to do the entire podcast instead of breaking it up because you had said it'd be nice to listen to the entire interview rather than breaking it up over a couple weeks. So that's what we're going to do today with Dr. Sears. Before we go any further, just a quick note. Remember, the Healthy Mind podcast is an informational show, and it's not intended to be medical advice. We're going to be talking about fish oils, but before you start any vitamin or supplement regimen, please make sure you're talking to your doctor or your health professional. It just makes good sense for your health. Okay? All right. Now, you've heard me blather on enough. Let's get to the heart of the podcast today. As I had told you last week, and I was so happy to confirm that Dr. Barry Sears was going to be with us today on the program for an interview. He's been gracious enough to grant us some time to talk about a lot of what I've talked about both in my clinical practice and tried to on the radio show about nutrition, specifically today as we talk about fish oils. Dr. Barry Sears, everyone tends to know him in the popular culture as the originator and the creator of the Zone Diet and the entire system thereafter. His book in 1995, really a landmark book in diet, has sold since that time well over, I believe, a couple million hardcover copies. And he's written 11 more books since that time, focusing on diet and his research on dietary control of hormonal responses. He's been a research scientist at Boston University College of Medicine and the prestigious Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. And really, Dr. Sears has dedicated his life to the study and research of lipids. His most recent book, Toxic Fat, really addresses a lot of the culmination, really, I would imagine, of of his research. We're very privileged here on The Healthy Mind to have Dr. Barry Sears with us. Dr. Sears, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, Peter, thank you for the opportunity.
I wanted to just start off, if I could, a bit, if you could just tell us a little bit about your journey, how it led perhaps to the Zone Diet, and then where really your research has gone now into the study of lipids and inflammation and how that really echoes throughout our body.
Well, Peter, actually, my journey started in a very odd way. I had no background in nutrition. Actually, my background was in the world of intravenous drug delivery systems for cancer drugs, where you're trying to basically decrease the toxicity, keep the drug in what is called a therapeutic zone. If you give too little of the cancer drug, the patient dies of cancer. You give them too much of the drug, they die of the drug. So you try to keep in that zone. So about 30 years ago, I realized that same principles could be applied to food to keep the hormones generated by the food we eat in that same zone. And for what purpose? To control inflammation. Why is that important to me? Because everyone in my family was dying prematurely of heart disease. My father died in his early 50s, and he was a world-class athlete. All his brothers died in the early 50s of heart disease. My grandfather died in his early 50s of heart disease. So I knew I carried the same genes that would predispose me to an early death. But at the time, when I was doing research in atherosclerosis at Boston University Medical School, it became apparent to me also that the key to controlling heart disease was not lowering cholesterol, but lowering the levels of inflammation.
I see.
So that set me on a journey to understand how food can either turn on or turn off inflammation.
Interesting.
Now, so, people say, well, that's but you're always, it's always about weight loss. I said, when I wrote my first book, very few chapters, one chapter out of 15 was talk about weight loss. All the other chapters talked about inflammation, and particularly how inflammation drives chronic disease. Perhaps if I was a better writer, people would have understood more about my books. But where it's germane, we're talking about especially in mental illness. Today, this is really the one, really kind of the dark secret of American healthcare. The amount of mounting mental illness we have. Right now, it's estimated that 1 in 5 people in America have some form of anxiety disorders. Mm-hmm. Almost an equal number have the same levels of depression. And we see a wide number of neurological diseases, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which was virtually not that it was undiagnosed, it just wasn't there.
That's right.
So we're asking, what has happened in the last 40 years that has given rise to the seemingly increased levels of neurological disorders? And I feel it can be traced back to radical changes in the diet that we're now only understanding the implications.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you pose it in that way, because no matter who I've talked to, whether it is the lipids that are the issue or perhaps vitamin deficiency or what have you, regardless of what the thought is in terms of what is the reason that this has started, what anyone is worried about is the inflammation. So it's very interesting that it continues to come back to inflammation. And you're absolutely right with the Zone. If people haven't read that and they thought it was the Zone Diet, that really you did dedicate quite a bit of the book to inflammation. So I'm glad that you did bring that up, because as you read that book, which I had, you know that it was the inflammatory and the inflammation issue that you were trying to address the most.
Well, exactly. And now the question is, how is this now germane to mental health? Well, your grandmother knew this many generations ago when she called fish oil brain food.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back further in time. Let's go back some 200,000 years when our species first appeared on the face of the earth. And genetically, we can trace them to a very, very small group of Africans, no more than 1,000, who are literally hanging on by their fingertips because they're pretty close to extinction. It turns out our African ancestors blundered on the brain food. It wasn't fish, because that was a very complex task, but they basically blundered on eating shellfish.
Mm-hmm.
And that contained enough of omega-3 fatty acids to start to give them significant cognitive advantages that made our species the head of the mountaintop in a very short period of time. And the reason is because our brain is based on having adequate levels of omega-3 fatty acids. When it does, it functions well. When it doesn't, you've got some problems. Yeah, and now we're starting to see those problems now emanate throughout our society.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. If you think about it in that kind of evolutionary context, the role that that might have had not only in survival, but for the brain to develop in a way that gave our species the advantage that it does now, it is pretty amazing to think of it in a global way like that.
Well, you have to, and when you do, it, you know, the implications become very scary, because animal studies are quite clear. If you take out omega-3 fatty acids from the diet and replace them with omega-6 fatty acids, this is exactly what's been happening over the last 40 years. What you see within three generations, the animals become quite dumb. They lose their ability to focus. They become quite anxious. They become depressed. Say, wait a minute, that sounds like America today. and say, is it possible that animals, the same thing are happening to us? And the answer, it turns out to be yes. The question is it that simple? Just adding back adequate levels of omega-3 fatty acids, can that basically reverse many of these diseases we're seeing? And it's not that people, where I said, I was predisposed to die of heart disease.
Sure.
You can't change your genes, but you can change their expression. That's a powerful statement. And that's why I think it's happening today, that people who are genetically predisposed, those phenotypes get expressed if the levels of omega-3 fatty acids in the brain drop below a critical threshold. And that's why our experience, we published these and others have confirmed them. Taking, let's say, a case like hyperactivity disorder. You can take children who have this and are undertaking their optimal levels of drugs, Concerta, Ritalin, and add back adequate levels, really therapeutic levels, and within 30 days, you see dramatic alterations in their behavior over and above the drug. You see the same thing in terms of substance abusers. One of the biggest problems with substance abusers, anybody who's been through their, you know, whether it be drug or alcohol addiction, says, I never want to go back again.
Right.
What happens? Relapse. What is the one of the primary causes of relapse? Anxiety. And so a publication a few years ago saying, if you give substance abusers who are going through an educational program high levels of omega-3 fatty acids, their likelihood of substance relapse is dramatically reduced.
Yes, that's true. Absolutely.
So we're looking at saying this changes, seemingly subtle changes in our diet, this increase of omega-6 fatty acids, which increase inflammation, a corresponding decrease of omega-3 fatty acids, which decrease inflammation, has basically put the brain on fire. And how that basically, you could say, well, I understand how this might play in things like Alzheimer's disease, it's a neuroinflammatory disease, or Parkinson's, it's a neuroinflammatory disease, or multiple sclerosis, it's a neuroinflammatory disease, but I don't get it relative to anxiety or depression. Well, one of the other consequences of this inflammation is it disturbs signaling networks. It's like a cell phone. When it works great. But when the call drops, you say, what happened? Well, the same thing happens in your brain. When those calls drop, it's because it's increased inflammation that's causing the signaling networks not to talk to each other. And now we make up terms for it. We call anxiety or depression or hyperactivity disorder. Say, are they possibly all different manifestations of the same underlying driving force? And that makes sense, because when you look at these people who have these conditions, their levels of omega-3 fatty acids in the blood are much lower than normals. The brain cannot make omega-3 fatty acids. It can only get omega-3 fatty acids from the blood. If you don't have the omega-3 fatty acids in the blood, you're not going to have them in the brain.
That's right.
And they're not in the brain. Basically, life's going to be a lot more difficult than it has to be.
Yeah, absolutely. what you're talking about, particularly with the omega-6s and the omega-3s, and I know you know that, but omega-6s are important, but what is happening, as you've indicated, is the ratio has flipped to really bizarre levels where we have right. incredible amounts of omega-6s in our diet, and we've lost the dietary intake, and there's very little that the body can do. It can't convert to omega-3. It's interesting, as you say that, about emotional illness as well. I was looking just today, Journal of Clinical Psychopharmacology came to my office, and it was a large analysis, meta-analysis of omega-3s and bipolar disorder. And it was fascinating. I mean, it was an unequivocal statement that it is helpful in bipolar disorder, not in mania, but that makes sense if we understand as an antidepressant role that it has. But the effect there is inflammation. And as I try to educate some of my patients, there is a process that the body will use when inflammation is there. Part of the building blocks that are used to mount an anti-inflammatory response are also used to make the neurochemicals that regulate our mood. So if we've got increased inflammation in our body, we are taking away some of those neurochemicals or the building blocks to make some of those chemicals. That's one of the postulated mechanisms. They're not sure for sure, but it's certainly in addition to some of the neural changes that you're talking about as well, with the noise and just not being able to fire. It is heartwarming to me because psychiatrists don't get excited about a lot, but this role of inflammation is really groundbreaking and really where a lot of the study is going in psychiatry right now. And it makes sense from a medical perspective because hypertension, cardiovascular disease, all of those, autoimmune disease or inflammation, why wouldn't it make sense that depression as well, you know, would be?
Well, exactly. And that's why it makes it so exciting, because now nutrition was always, you know, until recently, the venue of the health store owner.
Right.
Say, oh, buy vitamin X. No, buy vitamin Y. But now, with new breakthroughs in molecular biology, we understand how powerful nutrients can be in turning on and turning off genes. Drugs can't do that. Food can. But you have to treat food like a drug. You have to use the right dosage at the right time. And one of the problems that when you deal with neuroinflammation, you have to use a lot of fish oil. Use a placebo dose, you get placebo effects. You use a therapeutic dose, you get therapeutic effects.
Yes.
And our studies have shown that therapeutic dose is a lot. But once you have it and can maintain it, it ushers in a whole new era of psychiatry. You say, our first problem, we got to put out the fire in the brain. Now, there's a thing called the blood-brain barrier. Drugs can't cross it. Good thing, because they can do all sorts of damage.
Sure.
But the fatty acids, there is no blood-brain barrier. For them, going through the blood-brain barrier is like cutting warm butter with a knife.
Mm.
So if I can just get the right ones in there in the right amounts, I can begin to put out the fire and, more importantly, rebuild the brain. So let me give you one example, probably our best example. Was, you might have remembered about 6 years ago, the Sago mine disaster.
Yes.
When the miners were trapped in a mine cave-in, and when they rescued the miners, of the 13, 12 were dead on arrival. And the one they brought out was virtually dead also. He had heart failure, liver failure, kidney failure, and brain failure. He had no white matter. It had been destroyed by the inflammation caused by the carbon monoxide. So I got a call that night from his neurosurgeon. He said, what are we going to do? You notice I heard the word we. I said, what's we? Well, he just got a phone call earlier from the governor saying, this man cannot die. I said, oh, thanks, Gov. What am I going to do? But he'd read my books and said, I think fish will be useful. How much should we give him? I said, well, we just finished a study with kids with ADHD. I said, easily, 15 grams a day. He said, oh, my God, he'll bleed to death. I said, he's not going to bleed to death. So we airshipped down some of our fatty acids to him, started feeding through his feeding tube, 15 grams a day of these omega-3 fatty acids. 2 months later, he came out of his coma, kept on feeding the omega-3 fatty acids. 2 months after that, he went home. His heart was normal. His kidney was normal. His liver was normal. But he gave a press conference worthy of any politician. And say, it's a miracle. It's like, no, it isn't. It was aggressive use of nutrition to reduce the levels of inflammation in the brain, in the kidney, in the heart, and in the liver.
That's incredible.
It can't be that easy. Say, it is. That's the hard part. It is.
That's amazing, because I remember now that you had mentioned that, because I've always been sensitive to hearing about fish oil in the news, and I remember that, that's amazing that it was you who had been contacted and consulted on that. That's incredible. What do you think in typical diets, what dosages have you found is, you know, maybe for depression, but I think in general, what do you think, based on your research, is a general level that individuals should be looking at in terms of fish oil?
Well, it depends where the inflammation is and how much you have of it. Until recently, we couldn't measure this type of inflammation. Now there are blood tests, and that's what we use in our studies. We don't guess, we test. So we titrate the patient to a certain level in the blood that we can maintain that and really clamp them, and then basically let the body heal itself. When you deal with neurological problems, depression, ADHD, multiple sclerosis, you're gonna need in the range probably about 7 to 10 grams a day.
Wow.
Of omega-3 fatty acids. That's a lot. You say, well, but it's a lot because you've unmasked these genes for probably several generations. So it's going to take time to rebuild and rebuild those connections. But if you do that, say, all of a sudden, the brain heals itself. Now, what type of people do we do a lot of work? Obviously, mind cave-ins don't happen all the time. But we have one group of people who always get brain damage. They're called professional athletes.
Yes.
Hockey players, football players. And so we work with a lot of professional athletes who basically have been given up to say, in concussions, if the brain hasn't healed itself after about 3 months, what you see is what you get. And for a lot of these athletes whose careers are cut short in their 20s, they say, I'm going to face a lifetime of light sensitivity. I can't think. I can't concentrate. And the best and the brightest at Harvard Medical School says, these things take time. But doc, it's been 4 years. These things take time. So eventually they come to us and say, okay, let's look at the levels of inflammation. Surprisingly, they're high. I said, your brain's still on fire. Once you bring the levels of inflammation down that we can measure clinically by looking at the ratio of two fatty acids, one's the omega-6 fatty acid called arachidonic acid. The other is the omega-3 fatty acid called eicosapentaenoic acid. Mm. As we reduce that ratio, all of a sudden, the concussion of, you know, symptoms begin to resolve themselves. They're no longer sensitive to light. They can now be surrounded by people. Their sense of anxiety is decreased. It takes time, but you can rebuild a brain. That's the exciting part.
That's extremely exciting.
Medicine has been, for the last 80 years, we're going to use drugs to treat the symptoms. But if you're not basically treating the cause, you're basically just, it's a holding action.
That's right.
And with omega-3 fatty acids, you have a chance to rebuild the brain. And the more exciting thing, if you can rebuild the brain of people who have mental problems, then what if you can take people who are normal and can make them super normal? Well, that's why we published this studies in the Journal of European Clinical Investigation, taking athletes and putting them on lesser levels because they had no brain damage. But what you'd see within 35 days what is called their profile mood states. Their anger decreases. Their happiness increases. All in 35 days. And when you see changes in their brainwave patterns, you see exactly the same changes you see in people who've been meditating for 30 or 40 years.
That's incredible. That's an amazing statement that you just made there.
Now it's the psychiatry not to make people who have neurological problems normal. We can make everybody happier, more focused,
yes,
more generous. It's an exciting time in neurology.
It really is. It really is. And if we haven't thought about it, let's say in the scope of professional athletes, there's been quite a bit both in the research and in the popular press about giving fish oils or EPA or DHA to our children as they're developing because of how actively the brain is developing at that time. So I think people can at least respect the fact, yeah, there, maybe I didn't understand it with the professional sports, but there is a lot that's been written about DHA and EPA with regards to our children's neurological and cognitive health.
Well, I often ask parents, say, how smart do you want your kid to be?
Mm.
Oh, I want him smart. Are you giving him fish oil? Because that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
You're the most important organ in your body, the one that's growing most rapidly, is basically being malnourished. Now, two generations ago, no kid could leave the house unless they had a tablespoon of cod liver oil.
That's right, the whole generation.
The world's most disgusting food known to man. But the biggest public health care disaster in the 20th century occurred when parents stopped giving their children fish oil. Now, animal studies are quite clear. Once you stop, the first generation, not a lot of changes. The second generation, you start to see it. By the third generation, they are really done.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the third generation today.
Wow.
And that's why you see this rise of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Because the fact is, it's very difficult without adequate levels for omega-3 fatty acids for children to remain on task. Three generations ago, if you told a child to read a book, they could sit there for hours. Now say, I need something, because what they're looking for is something that hopefully will stimulate the reward hormone, which is dopamine.
Yes.
And we do have one agent that does a real good job of stimulating dopamine. It's called fish oil.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, dopamine is what basically drives the world, because it's your happiness hormone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all strive for happiness in the world, but we want to strive for happiness without hurting others. So a lot of things that basically, there are many things that increase dopamine. Food, sex,
mm-hmm.
accumulation of material things, exercise, all this can be done to excess. Meditation can increase dopamine. That's been shown. So can fish oil. So if your goal is to be as happy as possible, then say, my number one goal is make sure I'm feeding enough of the omega-3 fatty acids to allow the brain to make more dopamine. I become happier. I become more calm. I become more at one with the world.
Yes.
That's why fish oil 200,000 years ago, which made us human. And once we take it out of the diet, as we have in the last three generations, it begins to strip away all of our humanity.
I see. Yeah, and we know out there, not all fish oil is the same. And at times, I don't know that it's meant as deception by any means, but you'll see on many of the bottles 1,200 milligrams of fish oil. But then when you look at EPA and DHA content, it might be a third or a fifth of that. Can you tell us a little bit about what might be the best thing for consumers to keep an eye out on? And I know that you also have your product as well that you've developed in your company. But a little bit about that reality and what people need to be aware of as consumers so that they're using their dollars in the best possible way.
Well, you're quite right. It's really basically buyer beware out there. And the whole industry is one of, I won't say deception, but I will say deception, because it's saying, how can I basically fool them into taking enough fish oil? And unfortunately, all fish in the world today are contaminated by things we have thrown in the environment in the last two generations.
That's very important.
Things like
to know
mercury, flame retardants, dioxins, but the worst are PCBs. And these are like the Roach Motel. When they check in, they don't check out.
They don't check out.
So first of all, I say, if I'm going to take fish oil, I want to make sure it's pure. And two, if I take fish oil, I want to be taking enough. So how do we do purity? Well, if you happen to have a $500,000 GC mass spec in your kitchen, no problem. But that's usually not standard issue for most kitchens. But here's something that is. If you're taking fish oil, break open three or four capsules. Put the oil into a shot glass. Put the shot glass into the freezer.
Okay.
Come back 5 hours later with a toothpick. If you can't put the toothpick through the fish oil, meaning it's frozen solid, you've been taking the sewer of the sea.
Is that right?
If you can put it through the official, it's probably okay.
That's incredible. And a very practical way for people to find out, right?
And then you found 99% of all officials being sold are the sewer of the sea.
Yeah. And so
this is why consumers are so confused. And yet, yes, work on purity, but most important, make sure you're taking enough. Now, unfortunately, cod liver oil, the old standby, the world's most inexpensive source of fish oil, is now also the world's most polluted. But given the choice, if say, I don't have enough money, I said, I'd rather have you basically take in more pollutants like PCBs to make sure you're taking in enough omega-3 fatty acids.
I see. The risk reward there still favors that.
Ideally, you like to get purity, more greater purity. But number one thing, the one organ that you want to preserve is the brain.
Is the brain.
It's a terrible thing to lose.
Understood. You know, there has been this kind of proliferation over the last few years about, krill oil. And
yes.
I want to believe in it, but I also want data there. And I'd love to get your thoughts on krill oil. Are there conversions or research out there, solid data, that shows, one, it's equivalent to fish oils? And if it is, how do we know how much krill oil to take? It's very confusing, and I have not been able to find good research to support it, certainly not on the level of fish oil. I'd really be interested in your thoughts.
Well, you came to the right spot.
Great.
Because the fact is, krill oil, what it is, it's, just the extraction of small shrimp. Now, the problem with the small shrimp, you're not extracting the, because fish oil you can extract, but it's polluted. When you extract the small shrimp, it's also polluted. You just can't purify it. Now, I happen to have the $500,000 GC mass spec in my kitchen. Well, actually, it's my laboratory. So we can do things people can't do. We can look at the levels of contaminants. And when you look at krill oil, it's dirty.
Is that right? Across the board.
Here's another way. Get a krill oil capsule. This is like, how do you tell good wine from bad wine?
Mm-hmm.
You taste it.
That's right.
So how do you tell good oil from bad oil? You taste it. So bite into a krill oil capsule. My God, this tastes bad. Saying, you're right. That's bad oil. Plus, it's not very much of it. Remember we talked about a therapeutic dose? The levels of omega-3 fatty acids in krill oil are about one-third to one-fifth what they are in typical fish oils.
Okay.
So I have to take a massive amount of the krill oil to get enough of the omega-3 fatty acids to make a difference, but I'm taking in a lot of garbage.
Now, it seems to me, from at least the way that I've understood it, though, the opposite is what is being portrayed with krill oil. Less
yes.
amount that is needed compared to fish oil. How is that with your statement? And then what is really being portrayed out there where people are making decisions with their consumer dollars?
Well, they're based on very, very limited studies. Yes, krill oil will enter the bloodstream a little faster
okay.
than regular fish oil. So you do the study that lasts only 24 hours and say, my krill oil is the winner. Well, but you're taking fish oil the rest of your life.
Okay.
But this is not something I take for a month and then I stop. This is something that's an integral part of our genes that has to be a critical part of our diet for the rest of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So you're reaching a steady state. Now let's look at all the clinical data. There's right now about 10,000 studies done on fish oil. There's one haphazard study done on krill oil. Let's see, 10,000 here, 1,000, one there. Say, show me some more data. You've been looking for the data. Have you found it?
I've not been able to find it. And if I remember, it's been a while since I've seen it. That was an industry-supported study, correct, from a company that was making the krill oil. Doesn't mean that it can't be a fair study, but that's the only one I've been able to find.
Say, there has to be a preponderance of data. That's what we call evidence-based medicine. We should call evidence-based nutrition.
Sure.
Show me the data.
That's right.
So, I think that krill oil has potential, except I know it's almost impossible to clean up. Two, it's very low in potency, so you take a lot of it. And
okay.
it's very, very expensive. So, I'd like to see more data. But at this point in time, I probably know as much about fish oil as anybody in the world. I wouldn't take it.
That's right. And I think that that's important to hear. And as we always look, at least in our treatment for our health care, what is the evidence behind what you're going to do, doctor? The surgery, the medication, the procedure. I just want people to be as informed. And you have to look at that statement that you made. There is a mountain of data on fish oil and continues to be, but not very much on krill oil. That doesn't mean it's bad.
No,
but,
not at all.
But we
just need there's more research. But this is the case of putting the cart miles ahead of the horse.
That's right.
And saying, it is an area to basically research and to try to basically get higher concentrations, to get higher purity. But there's no interest in saying, how can I sell as much by putting as much TV ads on as possible?
I see. I wanted to ask you a question there on what you had said about the difficulty to purify. Is it because of something within the shrimp itself, or is the oil, is it a different type of composition compared to how it goes into the fish?
Composition. When you talk about fish oil, you're talking about triglycerides.
Okay.
When you talk about krill oil, you're really talking about what are called phospholipids.
Okay.
Now, when you heat fish, the oil rises to the top. To extract out phospholipids, you have to use chloroform and methanol.
Okay.
Two nasty little solvents, real nasty ones for the brain. And say, I hope I get all the chloroform and methanol out of the extract.
So that's what you're talking, the garbage isn't necessarily, as you say it, just how it accumulates in the shrimp, but also in the extraction process? Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is.
Interesting. Yeah, that's
And you would never pick this up unless you had very sophisticated instrumentation that very few laboratories in the world have access to.
That's amazing. But I do think that we look at where the research is going, and it is unquestionably towards fish oil. Do you think that's part of the reason that krill oil is not necessarily being studied as aggressively? Some of this is just a little bit difficult in terms of the being able to extract and really get a pure essence of krill? Or any thoughts on why there is so much on fish oil but not necessarily on krill? Or is it just a question of this is a relatively new oil at this point?
Well, no, it's an old oil. It's just saying that it's just hard to get a therapeutic dose.
Yeah.
And the government isn't there to support commercial enterprise. To say, if you have something that can basically treat a condition, God bless you, and we'll give you money to support it. The money hasn't been there because there's been no really driving force to say that, other than say, it's not saying we can't extract it. Otherwise, you wouldn't find it on every health food store in America.
I see.
You wouldn't find it on TV if you couldn't extract it.
Sure.
So I said, don't confuse me with the data. Just buy it. It's pretty. But we have to ask, say, show me the data.
Absolutely. I was struck. I watched an interview of yours on the internet, and the host of the show, I think it was on CBN, had been on was taking Lavazza, and you had your fish oil there, and you had said, ours is pure and more potent than what you're taking, and that's a prescription grade. When individuals are looking at the different options out there, how do you know if it's pure or not? How are you look on the box?
And you'd like to think brand, they say, how a brand? Well, Lavazza is a brand. It's made by one of the largest drug companies in the world. It's called SmithKline-Glaxo. And in their advertising, they say, no PCBs. Well, that's a lie. You expect that from a health food store manufacturer, but you don't expect it from the largest drug company in the world. And yet, because and why it's a drug and it's a good product, to make no question about it, but it was made using 20th century technology. Mm. Now with 21st century technology, you can reduce the PCB levels much lower. And so, okay, Lavazza is good, but if you can reduce the PCB levels down by another factor of 5, is that better? I think it is.
I would agree so. It just makes sense, particularly with PCBs that can sit and linger within our system and cause destruction.
They are known neurotoxins. They are known carcinogens. They are known endocrine disruptors. Yeah. So these are things you don't want to hang around your body, and you don't want them hanging around the brain.
That's absolutely correct. Can you tell us a little bit about your product? And to the listeners, we have no relationship with Dr. Sears. This is an informational interview, but I think it's fair to say you've got a product, and I think it's important for people to know about it as well here. Can you tell us a little bit about the formulation process and how you came to your product?
Well, all fish oil comes from the same location, off the shores of Chile and Peru, mm-hmm. from anchovies and sardines. Now, when you get out that the fish oil, they let the fish, and really it's a waste product because they get rid of the fish oil to feed the fish meal to cattle.
Yes.
So it's a waste product, and now you have to purify it. That's where you separate the men from the boys, because getting rid of all these things, taking something that has like a black tar-like look and getting something that's pure, that basically takes tremendous chemical engineering know-how. It can be done, but at a cost. But when I started this whole investigating fish oil, I said I could write about it. But unless I basically demonstrate to people there's a superior way, you'll get the law of regression to the mean. How can I sell the cheapest stuff and try to fawn it off as, fish oil?
Sure, pure. And
so I said, I'll show that basically it can be done. I have no illusions about basically controlling the world of fish oil. But I say it can be done, but you have to have a commitment to excellence. If you don't have a commitment to excellence, then basically you really don't have a commitment to life itself. So you call me old-fashioned. So I'm a stickler for excellence. And saying it can be done, it can be done cost-effectively, but some people don't want to hear that argument.
Yes.
But it's saying that at least I'm willing to basically stand up and say, the fish oil we make, and it can be made, and we make tons of the stuff. It's not basically it's made, little micro quantities. It can be done. We don't sell it in stores because you don't want to have the clerk at the GNC saying, what's the best fish oil? Well, how about this one? Because it's on sale today.
Right.
Because
right.
You want people to say, why are you taking fish oil? How much are you taking? What should you look for? And let them make an informed decision. So that's why we do make, I consider probably the best fish oil in the world. It's got among the lowest levels of PCBs of any fish oil.
Okay.
And it's one that basically passes the toothpick test.
Oh, right. Yeah, so people can check it out. What's the name of your product, please?
Well, the name of the product is called Omega RX.
Omega RX. All right, wonderful. It's an interesting thing when we think about fish oil that it really isn't anything within the fish per se, but the algae that it eats and converts that.
The fish are simply basically the accumulators. What made us human and will keep us human is pond scum.
Isn't that incredible?
it's only algae who can basically make these omega-3 fatty acids.
That's
the
right.
Fish are just a very efficient way of accumulating.
Now, I know that there's been some work in actually getting the essence of the algae oil itself. Any comments on that based on, obviously, you're in the midst of this with your research and your interest. Are we still too early in that, or has it not been practical or anything like that?
It's been practical for one fatty acid, and that has been DHA.
Okay.
Unfortunately, DHA does not have very many anti-inflammatory properties compared to EPA. On the EPA, the algae production has been pathetic.
I see.
They have found no mutant who can make EPA. Now, they're working on it, and each week you see a new press release saying, we're so close. So I said, and I don't care where the fish oil comes from or the algae. I said, send me a sample. I'd really love to promote your sample, but let me test it first. Somehow they said, you want to test our sample?
I said, yeah, we're...
Yeah.
Gosh, we don't know if we can send that, Dr. Sears.
Yeah, we'll get right back to you. But we do have a problem. There is not one person on the face of the earth who cannot benefit from having more fish on the diet. We are hunting fish to extinction. And the thing that made us human, we're on the threatening to basically pull it out of our humanity completely.
Yes.
And so we have a real problem facing her. Now, for me, it's fine. There'll be enough fish oil in my lifetime. But for my daughter and her kids, it's not clear. We're going to have a two-tier society, I believe. Those who have access to fish oil and will be happier, more productive, more focused, more calm, more human. And those who don't, will basically see much of their humanity begin to erode.
Yeah, and it's really sad when you look at the trends that are going there, because the essence of the health benefits of fish are the fish that are in the wild. There is fish farming, but yes, you make more fish, but the essence there, at least as it relates to the fish oils, because they're eating the natural algae, cannot be captured in the farm-raised fish. So you may be eating a fish, but at least from those benefits, you're not deriving very much of benefit, if at all. Isn't that correct?
Well, you're deriving some benefit. You know, something's better than nothing.
Of course.
And of course, cod liver oil, as bad as it is better than nothing.
Yep, as you said earlier.
But it's non-sustainable. It takes 2 pounds of wild fish to make 1 pound of farm fish. This makes no sense.
Yes.
So we have a problem.
Wow. How does this change on a greater level there? How do we reverse that?
Well,
I know we're going off a little bit here on a tangent, but
our biggest problem, we have too many people on the face of the earth. That's our biggest problem. Mm. We have my best estimate, we could easily sustain ourselves at a very high level at a total population of 2.5 billion people.
Wow.
We're now at 7, and we'll soon be at 9. And we've got some problems facing us, because there's simply no way that we can maintain the mental health of this growing population of humans on the planet.
Yeah, that's a very provocative statement that you make there, but it certainly gives us an idea of how do we properly address the nutritional needs of everybody? I think it is. Well, it's in that spirit, I think, that's probably said there.
And that's why I say, if we talk about, you know, a mandate, if we want to basically have our country to be basically intellectually on top of the the heap, we want to have an equivalent of a Manhattan Project to learn how to make algae, because that's our savior. When the fish are gone, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
To make algae and make this an integral part of these the fatty acids, an integral part of every American's diet. What we do almost overnight is dramatically improve our productivity, dramatically improve the mental health throughout America, dramatically improve our health care, and basically would give our country basically a leadership position that will basically sustain us in times of growing scarcity.
Hmm.
But we don't hear about this. And again, in many ways, I feel like Cassandra. You know, I say, here's the truth. I say, no, I don't want to hear it. I say,
right.
Bad times are coming, but we can get around it. But we have to have a national mandate. And this goes out to saying, of nutrition. Nutrition is our key to our future. It's just not fish oils. It's other things that, you know, your grandmother told you to eat. She said, you can't leave the table until you eat all your vegetables.
That's right.
She said, he didn't say you can't leave the table until you eat your corn muffin. But she was giving you very firm advice, because the vegetables also contain chemicals. They're called polyphenols, which give them the color. But they, too, are anti-inflammatory. So what you've seen in the last three generations, Americans are putting more white on their plate, more white pasta, more white bread,
mm-hmm.
white potatoes, yes. white rice. And if it's white, it means it has no polyphenols. If it has no polyphenols, it says you're going to become more inflamed. And where's that inflammation going to usually end up? In the brain.
What an amazing statement for a state of affairs in the country where to be overweight is an indication more of poverty than it is of wealth. Just because calories are so cheap and they can be accumulated so quickly because of the foods you just mentioned, and it you worry about it. You worry about corporate farming and even the fruits and vegetables that we eat today. What is the true nutritional value in them, and the way, if any? We just don't know what the impacts of genetically modified crops will be and the like. It's certainly, I would imagine, to someone like you who's dedicated his life to nutrition, you see that future much more ominous than someone who is just saying, well, gosh, I've not spent time really thinking about this. I just want to figure out what the family eats for dinner.
Well, exactly. And people are making, you know, good economic decisions, but they're perhaps very poor health decisions.
Yes.
And here's the most ominous thing. What happens is called fetal programming, how the mother's diet can alter the expression of the genes, the final fine-tuning in the womb before the child is born. And what is happening, we're in the midst of the world's largest genetic engineering experiment in the history of mankind. And the results have not been good.
So we're
talking about all the things we can do and say, we need better this, better this, we need better nutrition.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, everybody's an expert in nutrition because they eat three times a day.
That's right. Yeah, it's and it can get dizzying because you see conflicting studies and it gets lost in just in the mass of noise. What really is the truth? I really feel I want to ask you this to get your honest opinion on it. There are many, many theories for the health concerns that are in this country. How much do you feel of the basics, the biggest, cardiovascular disease, hypertension, diabetes, how much of that do you feel is linked or can be explained by diet as opposed to really, I guess, anything else? I mean, how much of this is, if we were committed as individuals, also as a society, but as individuals to really eating well, would we see the prevalence of these disorders? How much of this is solely based on nutrition? I don't know if we can make that distinction, but I'd love your opinion on that.
I'll give an educated guess. I'd say probably about 80%.
Isn't that something?
Because all those diseases you talked about can be traced back to increased inflammation,
yes.
Not due to a microbe, not due to injury, but due to our diet. And that's why, again, it's only now that we can look inside the cell, molecular biology, and say, oh my God, what have we been doing the last 40 years?
Yes.
We had never had the ability to move, look inside the cell to see how these nutrients can turn genes on and turn them off. And now you do, you stand back in awe. And then your second thing, you say, oh my God, we have basically, you know, been going in the wrong direction for the last 40 years. And can we reverse it? It's not clear we can. But as a society, but what you can do as an individual, you can protect yourself and say, okay, what can I do now to protect my, you know, both physical body and my mental health into the future? I go back in time. Go back in time, and here's a good rule of thumb. If you really want to have the best possible diet, never eat anything that did not exist 10,000 years ago. Okay, pretty bland diet. You can have grass-fed beef, you can have eggs, you can have fish. You can have fruits, vegetables, and nuts.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
Now, anything else that we've added in that time basically will have some type of inflammatory component. So you ask yourself, how lucky do I feel? Now, if you've got bad genes like I do, basically, you know, you say, do I feel lucky? But on an individual basis, it's a clear pathway, I believe.
Yes, and I think you've done a wonderful job, and really this with your international acclaim and what you at least had talked about early on, very basic, easy to understand, break the plate up into three areas and fill it with these foods. It isn't hard to do that and really take very quick and simple in the sense that it's intuitive. We can understand how to do it, steps to really make a difference. And as you're talking about, affect the expression of our genes.
That's the most powerful aspect. If there's anything that's come out in the last 10 years, it's like we have the ability to basically change the expression of our genes. That's why I started 40 years ago.
Yes.
I knew I had bad genes. If I did nothing to them, I was going to die prematurely of heart disease. That's in the cards. I said, perhaps I could find a way to change that expression. That led me on a new pathway, new journey. It's been a fascinating pathway. And what I just try to say, I think I've done it for myself, and here's what other people can do to basically change their gene expression to allow them to squeeze all they can out of their genetic heritage.
That's right.
But, you know, again, that it's unfortunately with the world of the internet, we have cacophony. And so everybody, again, is an expert, and all I can do is say, look at the data. Stand back, look at the data, analyze data, because otherwise we're basically like a piece of flotsam on the sea of life.
That's right. And I think the there is a lot of noise out there, but the damper on all of that to tone it all out, the noise-canceling headphones, if you will, is science. And I think you look at that and you look to where the science is pointing. And it is very clear, certainly in the discussion we're having with regards to fish oils and its role in inflammation.
And again, it's almost like saying all roads lead back to Rome.
Yes.
You want to say, what's the underlying cause of all chronic disease? It's inflammation.
Yeah.
What's the underlying cause of the aging process? It's inflammation. Say, well, I got it. If we can control inflammation, I can lessen chronic disease, and I can slow down the aging process. I said, you got it. Now, you got the intellectual aspect. The hard part is now the execution.
Yes, how do you do it in a meaningful way?
Yeah. And as long as you got one hand and one eye, you can probably balance the plate. And what's the last thing your grandmother said? You can't leave the house unless you take your fish oil.
Yes, yes.
Wow. She's at the cutting edge of 21st century gene technology.
Everything that is old is new again, right?
Always has been.
Fantastic. This has been just an incredible conversation with you. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us here on The Healthy Mind. If people want to get more information, Dr. Sears, about you, about your, and we will put links up to your website, what's the best way for them to learn more about you?
Well, probably the two best ways, go to either zonediet.com.
Okay.
Or go to my own personal website, drsears.com.
Okay, zonediet.com and drsears.com. Great, and for everyone listening, we're going to put all the links up there. And again, Dr. Sears, thank you so much for taking the time, someone of your expertise and dedication to this area of science. And it's, I know you knew it was going to be coming down this road again, but inflammation, and particularly with the fish oils and everything that you've done, are really as about cutting edge as it gets right now in understanding both inflammation and its impact on disease. Thank you again for joining us on The Healthy Mind.
Always my pleasure.
All right, wonderful. We hope to have you back again.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Sears. And there he goes, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Barry Sears. Wow, what a great discussion that was. He truly is one of the nation's foremost experts on fish oils and inflammation. He's dedicated his entire life, both in research and the books that he has written, to these ideas. So I hope that you got a better understanding about fish oils and inflammation in general. Well, we've done it again. You and I, we have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. Thank you for your emails. You can listen to us on iTunes. It's posted there every week. If you listen to it and like it, I'd love it if you could rate it. I really do appreciate all the support. As always, on Twitter, at Dr. Zafiridis, and my email, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.